The Hillsborough County Republican Party announces the return of the Summer Dinner Series Friday evening, June 25th, 7 o'clock at the Dr. Blaise Alfano Conference Center in Tampa. Come listen as candidate for governor, Attorney General Bill McCollum reflects on the past, the present, and the future of the Republican Party. Come for cocktails at 6:30 with dinner at 7:15. For tickets and more information, visit hcrp.org or call 813-434-5285. 813-434-5285.
The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. And now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsborough, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you once again for listening. Today we're tackling the blood clotting diseases, hemophilia and von Willebrand's, with guest expert Dr. Hussein Saba of the USF College of Medicine in Tampa. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with over 1,000 women during each of our last two events, with a combined 7,500 hours of education on those 2 days, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of direct with the expert health education. And as mentioned today, we're going to be tackling a topic that, at least I, for one, don't see a lot of information out there, generally speaking. It's a topic of importance, certainly, to those with this disease and those who are carriers of this disease. And that is, of course, hemophilia and von Willebrand's diseases, the blood clotting diseases. And Dr. Hussein Saba is with me. Hussein, it's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Dr. Saba. Dr. Saba received his medical degree from the Darbhanga Medical College at Bihar University in Bihar, India in 1963, and his PhD in 1970 in experimental hematology from the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. He served as the director of the Division of Hematology at the University of South Florida College of Medicine from 1979 to 1993, and the director of the Division of Hematology at the H. Lee Moffitt Cancer Center and Research Institute from 1986 to 1993. Dr. Saba has been chief of the Section of Hematology Oncology at the James A. Haley Veterans Hospital since 1999. He also serves as the director of the Hemophilia hemostasis and thrombosis, that means blood clotting, excess, center at the University of South Florida College of Medicine. He has been actively involved in clinical research at the University of South Florida, James A. Haley Veterans Hospital, and H. Lee Moffitt Cancer Center and Research Institute, with involvement of a total of more than 65 clinical trials as either an investigator or principal investigator. He has authored a total of 21 book chapters, 84 articles, and 152 abstracts. Dr. Saba is considered to be a national expert in myelodysplastic syndrome and other hematologic malignancies, and has presented his work nationally in the U.S., as well as internationally, including India, Australia, Brazil, Peru, Singapore, Spain, Turkey, the U.K., and Japan. And once again, Hussein, it is nice to have you here, and we look forward to today's show. And with that, I'd like to encourage anyone out there listening who may have a hemophilia condition, maybe be a hemophiliac, or is a carrier of the condition, as we'll learn today on today's show. Women are carriers or can be carriers, and so if you are such a carrier or have the disease or are interested in learning more about it, this is your opportunity. And the number to call is 289-1860 here in Hillsborough County. That's 289-1860. Everywhere else, it's 877-969-8600. 877-969-8600. And Hussein, I'll tell you, as I was reviewing for this show today, I was struck by how far we've come in the treatment of hemophilia. In my lifetime, back, for example, before the 1960s, the average life expectancy was only 11 years.
Absolutely, you're right, Hussein, and we have made a lot of progress. We remember the days when I was a fellow and we used to use just plasma. Then the time came for the treatment of hemophiliac patient with the cryoprecipitate, and we brought a lot of problem. I was in Chapel Hill at that time as a young fellow trying to get my expertise in the area of hemostasis and hemophilia. And one of my mentors, Dr. Hal Roberts, who is one of the top men in the world in hemophilia, he was teaching us that we should be shying away from usage of cryoprecipitate.
Shying away from using cryoprecipitate,
which is the product from the plasma, which was very, very useful because we don't have to give a whole lot of volume of the plasma to the patient with hemophilia. And this is a fraction which was discovered by Dr. Judith Poole one day in her laboratory, working. She just has some precipitate thing in the plasma of a patient who was having frozen. And she spun it down and did a checking for the factor VIII, all factor VIII activity. So we learned that we can obtain now factor VIII in the cryoprecipitate, which was a great thing for us to have because we don't have to use volume, we can use a small amount. Right. But Dr. Roberts used to teach us that with that, I think we're going to have problem because we don't know what else we are precipitating as we obtain the cryoprecipitate. And lo and behold came the saga of the HIV disease, which we did not know at that time.
Well, that's a fascinating history, and I think that the message there, again, and without getting too far ahead of ourselves, hemophilia, classic hemophilia A, is a factor VIII deficiency, and as Dr. Saba was mentioning, I guess before the recognition of cryoprecipitate, large volumes of plasma would be given to patients with this disease to give them the clotting factors to prevent bleeding out. And so the discovery of a small fraction of plasma with the capability of treating this disease called cryoprecipitate came about in the 1960s then. Is that correct?
That's right.
That's a huge discovery.
Huge discovery. And we also learned at that time by our teachers that the best way we can use the so-called cryoprecipitate is by homegrown cryo, and that was a very interesting word. What in the world is a homegrown cryo? So Dr. Robert and Dr. Brinkhaus, they are two stalwarts at that time of hemophilia, they used to teach us that the best way to obtain cryo is through a patient whom we know that he doesn't have any other disease, no viral disease, hepatitis, and all the other things. So if you don't have that, we should be very, very careful in usage of the common cryoprecipitate. I remember the day, at the time when I used to go to make around Tampa General Hospital, and there was, in Platter Street, and the corner of Platter and Kennedy, there was a plasma obtaining center. And there'll be a huge line of people who are trying to give blood for $10 per shot. Okay. And there'll be all the hippies will line up in the night for that time, that was the hippie era. And I used to see, my God, these are very funny type of individuals giving blood. And the blood collector here used to be sent to Highland in California, Highland Company. And they used to mix all the plasma and use the cryopreservation. That's how we came all the disease HIV.
Because back then, we didn't, that was before the recognition of contamination of blood products.
That's right.
And all right, well, let's get back to basics here. All right, let's start out with looking at hemophilia. There are three recognized types of hemophilia, A, B, and C. And hemophilia A is the most common.
Hemophilia A is more common. That's a deficiency of factor VIII. And then we have also hemophilia B, which is a deficiency of factor IX. So these are very, very important, hemophilia A and hemophilia B. More common is the factor deficiency that have been called also classic hemophilia.
Classic hemophilia.
Yeah.
Now, for listeners that are new to this disease, how would you explain the clotting cascade?
The clotting cascade in human is fascinating aspect. This is most fascinating you can imagine, because we know that blood runs in every organ. So every organ you talk about, there's a very important role of the interaction of the clotting proteins.
And every cell requires, of course,
absolutely
diffusion of blood.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have a lot of clotting factors which are needed physiologically to interact in order to make some substance which has the ability to convert a protein which you have in our blood physiologically, which is called fibrinogen. The fibrinogen gets converted into fibrin, which is a sealing plug on the bleeding area of endothelial wall or the vascular system. So that is called the clotting, and that is...
Okay, so just to review again, so anytime there's a breach in the integrity of a vessel, a capillary, and that so there's damage to that vessel, then the clotting system is activated at that time.
Absolutely.
In a healthy way.
A healthy way.
Because obviously there's also diseases where I guess the clotting system is inadvertently activated, but that's a whole different area of discussion.
Yeah. One of my very good friend named Reginald Mason, who was the chairman of the pathology here at USF, he and I wrote an article, and that was almost 15 years ago. He died at the age of 45, very young, a big researcher. And he used to define the hemostasis as physiological phenomenon. So blood clotting or sealing of the vessel wall is hemostasis, and when you have too much of the sealing going on, he called it thrombosis.
Okay.
So thrombosis is the pathological state, the disease state, where hemostasis is a normal phenomenon which we all need to stop any bleeding if you bleed.
All right, that's a very important point. So hemostasis is a normal physiologic phenomenon to prevent bleeding. When it gets out of control, then that's a thrombosis. And people may be familiar with thrombosis, a thrombotic event, which can occur in stroke, which can occur in a vein. When you're sitting on an airplane for too long, you get deep vein thrombosis. So these phenomena are related, but in one case, of course, it's pathologic, thrombosis. In the other case, hemostasis and clotting, it occurs in a healthy state. Mm. Okay, so how many factors are there in the clotting process?
So, Stephen, as you mentioned very interestingly, the whole balance of the hemostasis and thrombosis is one of the most delicate phenomena which we have in our system. So physiologically, we have the ability that if you have any injury in the blood vessel wall of seepage of the blood, the role of platelet, which is an organelle, which is not a clotting protein, is an organelle just like white cells, red cells, and the platelet. Platelet comes into play to achieve or to go with the so-called primary hemostasis. So that is the first.
So the first cell thing is the platelet
comes into play,
and the platelet is derived from the bone marrow.
Bone marrow,
like the white blood cell and the red blood cell, and the platelet, which is circulating through the blood, is the first one to arrive at the site of injury.
You got it. Yeah.
Okay,
and then as that happens, then the interaction of the clotting proteins, which have a lot of factors, so-called clotting proteins, which are made of proteins and carbohydrate, and they start interacting. And then we develop the activity of a clot-forming substance.
Okay.
So that is called thrombin. And thrombin as an enzyme has the activity of another protein, which is called fibrinogen, which has been referred as the factor one, matter of fact. So okay. Very important factor. So that becomes a gel, and that seals the primary hemostatic phenomenon which is going on by the platelet. So for the cementing is done by the clotting proteins, and that leads to the fibrinogen deposit, or fibrin deposit on the substance of the platelet plug. So
okay,
far.
So first the platelets come in, and they seal the injury, then a series of clotting proteins come in, and go ahead and try to begin this process of cementing that area of damage.
Yeah.
And with a 13, 14, how many different clotting factors do we know of?
More than 14, I think.
More than 14,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that that so-called classic hemophilia, the major types of hemophilia, happen to be factor 8 and factor 9 deficiencies.
Absolutely right. Factor 8, factor 9 are more common, and they're deficiencies. So there's a balance of these clotting proteins that helps us to stay in physiological state. If you have deficiency, then you get bleeding. And if you start being too much of the clotting protein, then you have thrombosis.
Excessive
sometimes
clotting,
there are some inhibitor, which are also needed to maintain the balance of the clot formation mm-hmm. and clot lysis.
Okay.
So it should be emphasized that every time we are making a blood clot deep in thrombosis, the people should know that the clot is lied by its own system. We have a system built in our human blood mm-hmm. that has ability to dissolve a clot. So when we use heparin, we are not trying to use heparin to dissolve the clot existing. Dissolution is done by the physiological system which we have mm-hmm. as a lytic agent. And we are just trying to prevent further clotting by the heparin or heparin-like drugs in treatment of DVT.
So our body is able to monitor the status of these of clots that occur, say, in a deep vein thrombosis, and is actually able to actuate a system to break down that clot. We have a system that constantly monitors the level of clotting in our bodies.
Yeah.
And okay, so we talked about then. So we've got a system of first the platelets and then the clotting factors. Now, when we have factor 8 deficiency or factor 9 deficiency in hemophilia A and B, I understand we actually form we form the clot, but it doesn't last. Is that correct? In other words, there's some gel formation there, but it doesn't last. Therefore, in the hemophiliac, patients can bleed for long periods of time, even weeks or months. Is that correct?
Absolutely right. And it's called as a delayed bleeding. So it's not uncommon to see that a hemophiliac who goes to the emergency room with a cut and doctor examining, and he's not bleeding anymore. For the immediate, there is some action in the blood to stop the bleeding. And then after 3 or 4 days, the doctor put a stitches, couple of stitches, says, patient, you are fine, just go home. And the patient starts having bleeding after 3 or 4 days, a big hematoma on the site of the incision or
mm-hmm.
repair.
Mm-hmm.
So that's called delayed bleeding, which has been very classic for hemophilia patients. And the hemophilia can be defined with 3 categories, as you mentioned earlier. Classic hemophilia, which is a factor 8 deficiency. Then we have factor 9 deficiency, which is very similar to factor 8. And then we have vascular hemophilia, which is called von Willebrand disease. That's an interesting discovery by Dr. von Willebrand, and that has also its role to play there.
Okay, and you called it vascular hemophilia because of the origin of that von Willebrand factor, I presume.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, so the von Willebrand factor, what's the function of the von Willebrand factor?
Well, Dr. Willebrand was the smartest physician I can imagine. Right in those days, we have no much concept of hemostasis. He was able to tell us that this disease is different than classic hemophilia. Von Willebrand disease is different from classic hemophilia. And there seemed to be a very important role of the vascular wall in von Willebrand disease. And now we learn the vascular wall has the ability to produce von Willebrand factor. Von Willebrand factor, which important source is the vascular endothelium, which is lining of the blood vessel wall. And that's where the VWF of von Willebrand factor is being released.
So von Willebrand factor is synthesized by the endothelial cell, which lines the vessel wall. Does it protect the factor 8? How does it interact with
factor
8?
It's a very important question, and the comment you made is, it's a very important factor to maintain the integrity of the factor 8. if you don't have enough of 1v1 factor, factor 8 activity will be lyzed very fast. It will hydrolyze from the system.
So with von Willebrand's disease, without the protective factor, without the von Willebrand factor, then factor 8, which is normally made in that patient, will be dissolved, broken down at an accelerated rate, or and therefore you effectively don't have stable factor 8 to form this clot and prevent bleeding. Okay, and now von Willebrand's frequency of von Willebrand's disease versus classic hemophilia A.
Yes, we can say very easily that von Willebrand disease is seen both in male and females. So we are learning more and more that more females have problems with von Willebrand disease as compared to males. For example, we made a campaign almost 15 years ago here in Tampa that I sent a letter to all GYN clinics. If you have a female who has too much heavy menstrual bleed, before you do the hysterectomy on this patient because of bleeding problem, let's check. Please refer the patient to be checked out for the von Willebrand disease. And now we have known, after our initial campaign, that is known that one of the most common causes of heavy blood loss during menstrual period in females who otherwise asymptomatic is von Willebrand disease.
That's fascinating. And so let's repeat that. The most common cause of heavy menstrual bleeding is
von Willebrand disease.
In a study that you did. And if von Willebrand's is diagnosed with a blood test, I imagine.
Yeah, it can be diagnosed with a blood test.
Okay, and would you say that it's more frequently to have that than say fibroids as a cause of menstrual bleeding, or is another one of the common cause? Or
it's, I would say at least should be second most important cause of the bleeding to the uterus, the
okay.
females.
So the point is, I think the point we're trying to make is it should be in the differential diagnosis for heavy excessive menstrual bleeding, and of course incorporating other aspects of the physical examination would be key. These patients, I guess all hemophilia patients, they can also have problems with dental procedures.
Yeah, all the patients have the kind of problem. Some patients don't, but von Willebrand disease is presenting with dental bleeding in males and females after surgery or heavy menstrual bleed. And they have easy bruising syndrome, which is not that common in hemophilia. So that's one of the very interesting difference. They both are very much related diseases because factor 8 is stabilized by von Willebrand factor. But both male and females are affected with von Willebrand disease. And they have easy bruising, they have dental bleeding, heavy muscle bleed. Whereas factor 8 deficient patient, they bleed in the joint, they bleed in the muscle.
But von Willebrand tend not to bleed into the joint?
No, not that commonly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to come back with more on hemophilia and von Willebrand's disease, and we encourage you to call with your questions, 289-1860, 289-1860, in Hillsborough County, everywhere else, 877-969-8600. We're tackling hemophilia today. Be right back.
There's already a lot of oil that's been released, and that there is going to be more oil released.
The oil is still gushing beneath the Gulf.
It's not just the people working on the boats. It's everyone.
And the White House continues to take the heat for a lackluster response.
We still don't have a structure that allows for accountability.
It's so bad, even a laid-back singer like Jimmy Buffett is upset.
An environmental disaster that nobody asked for over here.
Now, more than ever, still wasting away in Margaritaville. Talk Radio 860, WGUL.
The Hillsborough County Republican Party announces the return of the Summer Dinner Series Friday evening, June 25th, 7 o'clock at the Dr. Blaise Alfano Conference Center in Tampa. Come listen as candidate for governor, Attorney General Bill McCollum reflects on the past, the present, and the future of the Republican Party. Come for cocktails at 6:30 with dinner at 7:15. For tickets and more information, visit hcrp.org or call 813-434-5285, 813-434-5285.
I'm Chris Gould, General Manager for Salem Communications. Governor Crist has vetoed the ultrasound bill, 1143, marking yet another major piece of pro-life legislation that he has vetoed while in office. Since the state of Florida already requires second and third trimester ultrasounds so the expectant mothers can actually see the life they are terminating, It's extremely disappointing that this simple procedure would be deemed somehow coercive by the governor. As we've said before, our society is constantly speaking about the value of choice, and to their credit, those who argued for Governor Chris to veto this bill have made...
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. After he gets back from a two-day visit to the Gulf of Mexico on Tuesday, President Obama will address the nation from the Oval Office about the oil spill. His advisor David Axelrod tells NBC Mr. Obama wants BP to set up a special account to pay claims resulting from the spill. Police say many of the people who were initially reported missing after that flash flood early Friday in Arkansas, probably camping elsewhere in the state, they have not been, that's why they haven't been reached, but they're not missing either. Only three people are missing. 18 people were killed in those floods. The Iraqi military says gunmen tried to storm the country's central bank and battle security forces for hours today after a series of bombings nearby. At least 15 people were killed. And two interstate highways in Greensboro, North Carolina, have been shut down since early today after lightning struck a large gasoline tank and set off a fire. This is SRN News.
This is Hugh Hewitt in this wild and...
I'm Dr. Bill Handelman for CanCare Clinic at Bay Area Medical with your summer health and wellness tip. Protect yourself against poison ivy and know your plants. If you come in contact with poison ivy, wash with soap and water, use cortisone cream, and oral antihistamines. And for all your medical needs, call me, Dr. Bill Handelman, at Bay Area Medical, 727-384-6411, or on the web at BayAreaMed.com. That's BayAreaMed.com.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. He has written a best-selling, award-winning book, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome, published by Yale University Press. Dr. Maskin manages dry eye disorders using, when needed, innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has successfully managed difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He has been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2010. And as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America, we hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please visit drmaskin.com. And if you have not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today we're tackling hemophilia and von Willebrand's diseases, the bleeding diseases, and we are joined with our guest expert, Dr. Hussein Saba, hematologist-oncologist from the USF College of Medicine. And we were talking about a number of things, including how far we've come with this disease. Way back in the late 50s, early 60s, the average life expectancy was only 11 years, until at that point, the development of cryoprecipitate, which is from plasma, with factor A, and the recognition of factor VIII deficiency as the cause of classic hemophilia, was widely recognized and therapy initiated. Back then, or for that matter, Hussein, how do, of course, you know, speaking about the risks of bleeding diseases or bleeding disorders, we mentioned how with a hemophilia, there's an, we call it internal and external bleeding, and that an internal bleed, which occurs in hemophilia but not von Willebrand as often, can lead to significant damage of joints.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the hemophilic, so-called hemophilic arthropathy, they call it, is a very, very important complication of classic hemophilia. The synovial joint gets stimulated, then start proliferating, a lot of pathology goes on, and the patient can end up with a lot of deficiency, a lot of disability of the joints. Most common joints, it just depends upon different types of joints, but most commonly we see the knee joint, shoulder joint, and ankle joint being too much involved.
Knee, shoulder, and ankle joints are the most common, right. And does the patient actually just simply bleed into the joint space?
They bleed the joint space, and blood in joint space is not a good substance to have. So there used to be a treatment in the past. They would just try to put a needle to suck out all the blood from the joint. And there was some suggestion that this could be very efficacious to prevent the joint damage. That practice has now not that common, because every time you're bleeding patient, you're putting a needle to draw the blood, you're causing more bleeding.
Yeah. Mm.
So that is not, but the fact remains that this has been the worst thing to have blood in the joint, because it causes joint damage. I have seen patients coming on as a crippled patient with multiple joint involvement. They're coming to my clinic on the wheelchair. They can't even walk with that damage.
So they can't walk. They lose the ability to walk. And, of course, when blood gets into a joint, then you have scarring ensuing, fibrosis scarring, and immobility of the joint, as you mentioned. So some of these patients, I imagine, may even wind up in a wheelchair.
Absolutely. Many patients have a complete locked joint. They can't even have any movement. They're sitting on the wheelchair. But the time has changed, Stephen. The time has changed so much that we have gone forward in the treatment from the cryoprecipitate. Now we have recombinant factor 8.
Recombinant factor 8.
When it was in making, I was being told that they will come, it will be so cheap to use it, because now E. coli, the bacteria, is going to be producing all the factors. Mm. We don't have to go and collect the blood from the humans to get the factor 8. But the fact remains, it's still very expensive, because the technique has used a lot of money in the research. But recombinant factor 8 is a tremendous discovery at this point, and that helps this patient a whole lot.
Mm. So what can be done? Let's look at the patient who has a fresh bleed.
Mm-hmm.
What is, and I don't know if this may be out of your area, maybe more of an orthopedic surgery question, but if they have a fresh bleed into a knee, let's say a patient was not receiving prophylactic recombinant, but more of an on-demand kind of treatment, and they come to your office with a fresh bleed into a knee, do you then provide them the clotting factors on demand, then have the orthopedic surgeon go in and remove the hemorrhage? How's it handled?
I think at this point the most important thing is to intervene ASAP. It used to be that my patients are bleeding, they call me, and some of these patients, they did not have technique to infuse themselves.
Mm.
And it's amazing to see that hemophiliac population, even a 4-year-old child, has been trained to the level that he bleeds and immediately starts his own IV.
Really?
And get the factor. So that's the best treatment to stop bleeding at that time. It used to be that my patients are going who are not trained to infuse factor. Mm-hmm. They'll go to the emergency room at Tampa General and City Community Hospital, and they are so busy themselves that my patients are waiting in the waiting room for 2 hours before they have taken the attention of a physician in ER. And that time is so dangerous for them to keep bleeding in the joint. So it's a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
That has been now minimized with the word we use, prophylaxis.
Mm-hmm.
And prophylaxis of the factor 8 and hemophiliac has made a tremendous recovery. And we owe this to a doctor in Sweden who used the technique to use factor 8 infusion as the moment the kids are becoming at 5 years old. She will start using factor 8 on 3 times a day basis.
3 times a day?
3 times a day.
Right. I want to bring something out here at this point, and that is that factor 8, as you indicated, young children. Why young children? Because it turns out that factor 8 deficiency is primarily a male disease as far as the symptomatic. As I read, typically the first time one gets a notion of their son having hemophilia is at the time of circumcision.
Absolutely. Circumcision is the first time to present the bleeding diocese hemophilia patient. Most of these patients who have severe deficiency of factor 8, they will bleed at time of circumcision. The most of the diagnosis have been made at that time.
And so if and when that were to happen these days, is it a controllable? What happens? Let's say you have a 7-day-old child with a circumcision is bleeding. Is he able to control the?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I should like to say that now we have the, and this is what I teach, this is what I preach to my all my colleagues, physicians, that hemophiliac patients are in a situation now with the research we have done, with the research we have learned from others, that any patient can undergo any type of surgery. He should behave just like any other non-hemophiliac patient. We have the ability to infuse factor VIII, and the, because recombinant factor VIII is available, and that can keep the patient in a very normal state, so they should not be having bleeding. So the way to treat will be immediately to intervene with the factor infusion right away.
Okay. Now, let's get a little bit into the genetics. The reason why young boys are first recognized is that it's
a sex-linked recessive disease.
Sex-linked recessive disease.
Which means that the males, the females are the carrier and the males bear the burden of the disease.
Okay.
So that's a very important difference between this disease, hemophilia classic, which is sex-linked recessive disease, manifested by the males and carried by the females. Unlike the von Willebrand, which can be seen both in males and females.
So von Willebrand is autosomal, so it's non-sex linked.
Right.
Whereas hemophilia, classic hemophilia A, is on the X chromosome, and because the males have only one X chromosome, if they have it on that one X, then they've got the disease. Whereas a woman who has two X chromosomes, if they can be carried because they can have it on one X chromosome but not the other, therefore they can carry the disease and not manifest the disease.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. And all right. So okay. Now we talked about, and it's interesting. I'm fascinated that talking about how kids 4 years of age already learned how to go ahead and infuse their own themselves with an IV to give them factor.
Yeah, this is tremendous thing that happened. And as of this time, I would say that almost 80% of the children with hemophilia, they have been trained to self-infuse, and that has made a remarkable difference. I like to give tribute to a lady in Sweden, that Dr. Inga Marie Nielsen was the first one who brought all the kids with hemophilia. They have grown to 22 years of age. So she first time we saw international meeting in Mexico, I think it was, that there were these hemophiliacs standing on the stage with Dr. Nielsen, and they look just like normal. They had no disability at all. Whereas before that, every hemophiliac is crippled, walking,
crippled,
lower joint disease.
Right.
Sometimes crippled. And these were just looking like a normal males.
Wonderful.
So it was all because she's the only one who could afford to do that in Sweden, because government will help her to take the factor and infuse his children. Mm-hmm. And so she did that for all this time and showed no disability at all. The joints were the fine. No joint damage. That was a remarkable discovery.
And this was, as you mentioned, called prophylactic delivery of the factor VIII.
Exactly.
So that's the state of the art, is to give prophylactic. And you mentioned, I think, three times a day?
Three times a day. That's what Dr. Wilson used, that Monday, Wednesday, Friday was a schedule to give very small amount of factor VIII. And she showed that even very small amount of factor VIII left over at the end of the day is good enough for to keep them from bleeding. It's amazing. And that we didn't know before.
Let me clarify something. What's done now? What's done now with kids? How frequently do they receive the factor VIII as a prophylactic therapy?
Fortunately, our wonderful country has accepted the concept that, yes, the kids should have primary prophylaxis. It was not common in this country. We could do that in Europe, but the United States, we had difficulty in doing that because of the
cost.
Expense.
Mm-hmm.
The cost is very much.
But so every day the children get it.
Every children is it. Okay.
And three times a day.
Three times.
So is it still an IV infusion, or is it?
It's still IV infusion.
And it's done at home under the parent's supervision. Pretty much. Okay.
Pretty much.
All right. And now, what are the other common areas where hemophilia can have significant complications from bleeding? Besides, we talk about joint space, commonly the knee, shoulder, ankles. Yeah. How about intracranial hemorrhages?
Very dangerous, and the hemophilia can not only bleed in joint, they can have internal, so-called internal bleeding. And one of the most important things which we have taught to the doctors, that the moment you have a hemophilia with a history of auto injury, he should be given factor VIII immediately, right away. That we don't have to wait for the CT scan, this and that, to see whether there's a bleeding going on and on in the head, because you can lose this patient.
Right.
So
right.
That's a very important thing. And hemophiliac do have tendency, they can bleed in the thigh, and they can
to the deep
hide,
muscle.
Deep muscle, they can hide almost 2 liters of blood there.
2 liters.
Even before the swelling and all that thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the hematoma can dissect under the inguinal ligament, and you can have crushing of the kidneys. They can develop into kidney failure with the bleeding which has happened 3 or 4 days ago.
Okay.
If not properly treated.
Okay. And as you pointed out, as we stated in our show already, this is prolonged bleeding.
Yes.
So these patients don't assume that the bleeding is cessated, that it may continue for days and days and weeks and months for that matter.
Yeah, we have that. This is one of the things we are trying to teach to all the physicians, that the hemophiliac, the classic hemophilia, had delayed bleeding. So if you don't see any too much bleeding going on after the initial injury, don't be satisfied. Make sure that you give some more factor for prophylaxis in this patient.
Okay. All right, we're going to take another quick break and encourage you to call in with your questions. That's 289-1860 here in Hillsborough County, 289-1860. Everywhere else, it's 877-969-8600, hemophilia and von Willebrand's disease, the bleeding tendencies. Be right back.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. In this very important election year, where can you go to get fresh, intelligent, conservative reporting on the issues and the candidates? Whether it's the economy, the Supreme Court, or immigration, Town Hall Magazine is loaded with stories and insights you can't get anywhere else. And with your subscription, you can choose your own free gift book. Choose from Dick Morris's Take Back America, Karl Rove's Courage and Consequence, Michelle Malkin's latest book, and more. Pick your free gift book when you subscribe to Town Hall Magazine. Must reading for conservatives. Log on to townhallmagazine.com today. That's townhallmagazine.com.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit FocusOnFemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling bleeding diseases today, von Willebrand's disease, as well as hemophilia A and B. That's factor 8 deficiency for hemophilia A, and hemophilia B is factor 9 deficiency. 80% of patients with hemophilia are hemophilia A, and roughly 20% are hemophilia B. And the epidemiology, about 1 in every 5,000 births are factor 8 deficiency or hemophilia A, just to give you some feel of that. And what I wanted to ask you, Hussein, is about the so-called hemorrhagic disease of the newborn. Why do, and this may be a question that some of the moms out there listening may have, why do kids or newborns typically get a shot of vitamin K before they leave the hospital?
I'm pretty sure that because the fact that the newborn child liver is not mature enough to produce all the factors, so there is usually a deficiency of the prosomal complex or of factor 2, 7, 9, and 10. These are the important factors which are vitamin K dependent, vitamin K is involved in the synthesis of this factor from the liver. And if the liver is not mature enough to produce that, then that happens.
Okay, so vitamin K then is an important vitamin to have for the synthesis of these factors, and the newborns don't have the vitamin K. Do you see this in adults too, with like malabsorption syndromes, since the vitamin K is a fat soluble vitamin?
Yes, it's very not uncommon to see that some of the nutritional deficiency or some liver disease. If liver is short due to cirrhosis or due to any disease, it's not producing that much of vitamin K dependent factors.
So in those patients, let's say you have a patient with. Those patients with, say, a vitamin K deficiency, maybe from liver disease, they present with bruising, or they present, in other words, they present, they can have a number of clotting factor deficiencies.
Yes, multiple factor deficiency, factor 2, which is prothrombin, factor 7 deficiency, and then the factor 9 deficiency and factor 10 deficiency.
So how do those people get fresh frozen plasma? How do you treat those patients?
We can give them concentrate. Can give them plasma. Plasma is all the factors. We can use plasma for the treatment. If you want to have more concentrate, we can give vitamin K dependent factor concentrate, which we have now available for us to use.
So would you, in that setting, would you try to give the, you obviously, you know, if they're bleeding, you actually have to obviously give them the what they need, all the necessary clotting factors. But longer term, do you try to assess whether or not just ample or improvement in diet, vitamin K would do the trick, versus having to replenish them frequently with frozen.
Yeah, we do that. Patients who are on the antibody for a long time, patients who are in ICU, intensive care unit, and they have an IV fluid, they can develop vitamin K deficiency, and they can have prolongation of the clotting system, like PT and PTT, which are the measure for the deficiency of this. And if they have that, usually the doctor gives a shot of vitamin K and with the next 24 hours, the bleeding corrector.
So as long as the liver can utilize that vitamin K, then we're good to go, so to speak.
Good to go.
Okay. Right. And let's see. Let's talk a little bit about the antibodies and treatment of hemophilia. As you mentioned during the hour, that sometimes patients can develop an antibody to factor 8, and in which case that would neutralize or diminish or render the factor 8 IV injection ineffective. What do you do at that point? Frequently is that problem? See that problem, and what do you do about that?
That's not uncommon. We call them as acquired hemophilia. Yeah, we have a classic hemophilia, which is a factor 8 deficiency. They're born with a deficiency. And then often we see patients, not uncommonly, who had no history of any hemophilia before, no bleeding disease. All of a sudden, he's behaving like a hemophiliac. And do all the tests, he has factor deficiency. That's called acquired hemophilia. And perhaps acquired hemophilia is more common than the classic hemophilia. It happens in without any rhyme or reason sometimes as we are growing older. So elderly patients are prone to develop sometimes inhibitor against factor 8. So that antibody against factor 8 will destroy the factor 8, and patients start behaving just like hemophilia.
Okay, so that's interesting. So then it seems like there's two scenarios where that inhibitor may play a role. One is in a known hemophiliac who's getting factor 8 as prophylactic therapy or on-demand therapy, developing an antibody to it as a part, as one scenario. And the second scenario is, as you said before, just spontaneously developing an antibody to their own intrinsic factor 8.
Exactly. So that's what we call acquired hemophilia. So inhibitor can come in two ways. Inhibitor can be seen in patients who have classic hemophilia, and they develop sometimes the inhibitor against factor 8. So it becomes very hard for them to be treated now because they have a destroying mechanism for the factor 8. And sometimes if we have a situation where the patient never has been exposed to factor 8 or anything, and all of a sudden he develops an antibody against factor 8, and they start bleeding like pig.
That the setting of acquired hemophilia, where the patient develops an antibody to factor 8, does that sometimes occur in the setting of other diseases?
Yes, very much so.
Like autoimmune diseases?
Autoimmune diseases. Okay. It can happen patients who are taking a lot of antibiotics, patients who have been treated with heavy penicillin for a month, Like, for example, patient with subacute bacterial endocarditis, taking penicillin for long period, they can develop antibody. Patients who have some chronic diseases of skin like pyoderma, gangrenosa, and it has been seen that this patient can all of a sudden develop an acquired inhibitor.
So it can be seen as part of a like a Stevens-Johnson type of autoimmune disease, or a lupus-like syndrome.
Lupus-like syndrome, rheumatoid disease, they all can develop platelet-like.
Okay, so this becomes important for patients, obviously, with lupus, with any of the maybe any of the autoimmune diseases, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, and so forth. If bruising becomes an issue, and then the treatment for that is it? Can you do you go to like a porcine vitamin 8 if you needed to, or
treatment can be if we have porcine factor 8 is not being made in this country anymore, but have available in Europe, and it used to be here also, so we can use that. But treatment could be that we have to give them a lot of factor, and sometimes we just bypass the factor 8 pathway. That's called bypassing product. So, as I mentioned, factor 2, 7, 9, and 10, vitamin K dependent factor, concentrate, we have the ability to isolate the these factors. We can use that in patients who had an inhibitor, bypassing factor 8. So we can give an agent which has the ability to convert prothrombin to thrombin and bypassing factor 8 and inhibitor, we can make a clot.
So, for example, you can give factor 7 as
factor
a,
7.
One example.
Very important factor, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about prevention. Do you typically recommend in your hemophiliac patients to do exercises to increase the flexibility, tone, strength of the muscles around the joints that potentially could get impacted by the bleeding into the joint?
Absolutely, and that should be hemophiliac. They need to have the exercise going on for the joint. And I have some hemophiliacs, severe hemophiliacs, they're bleeders. But they are so much tuned to the exercise that they can just go for an hour on biking, and they have no bleed. But they can bleed when they bleed, they bleed. So exercise is very important to keep the tone, muscles, the joint intact, and that helps them to maintain their normal stability of the joints.
Do you, let's say you have a hemophiliac who's receiving prophylactic treatment with factor 8, and they want to engage in more... sports with a little more potential for contact. Do you advise against that?
Usually, I don't like to tell them very frankly that you should do and do contact sports because the chance of bleeding actually exists.
Even though they're on the prophylactic?
Even though you're on prophylactic, mm-hmm. because prophylaxis is never 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always a chance of bleeding. So, but they can have all the other normal activity and all the other normal exercise schedule. They play basketball for that matter.
Okay, I was going to say because of course basketball is a contact sport.
Yeah,
and they seem to do.
It's interesting. Well, a lot of my patients, the young guys, they are very much involved in basketball.
Okay, looks like we're finishing up here, and so I want to thank my good friend Dr. Hussein Saba. I guess one thing we want to leave our listeners today with a notion or the concept that although back in 1960 the average life expectancy was 11 years, today the average life expectancy of a hemophiliac patient is?
Almost normal.
Almost normal.
Almost normal.
So we've come a long way with that. So we thank all the pioneers in this disease for identifying and creating the solution, the therapy, which allows these people to have a near normal life.
And I must say that we have made a big progress because of the public support. Remember the HIV disease which came, it wiped out almost 60% of my hemophilia. And it was the public hemophilia raising all the hell that we have to have more research.
All right, we thank you very much. Next week is tuberculosis, the looming epidemic. Next week on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Have a great and healthy week. Bye-bye.